Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Monday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Today would be a wonderful day to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews, and of course, check out those Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube memberships as well. In just a moment, we're going to be going over the best and worst players at Packers training camp so far through 2 weeks. Excited to dig into that. But before we get there, a huge, incredible shout-out to Luigi's Pizza, Luigi's Frozen Pizzas, my favorite pizzas. We are partnering again together for this next year. I could not be more thrilled about it. I go back to, if you're not familiar with the story, this is a truly organic relationship. This is not some forced thing. I could not be more excited because I legitimately love Luigi's Frozen Pizza. I tweeted out a victory pizza, I don't know, a couple years ago now, and they saw it. They came to me. They said, do you want a partner? I said, yeah, absolutely. I got to tour their facility. They have the best ingredients. It's why their pizza is so good. If you are in an area where you can get a Luigi's Frozen Pizza and you haven't tried it yet, I don't know what to tell you. It is the best frozen pizza. I have tried probably way too many frozen pizzas. This is the best one. I can say that legitimately because it was my favorite before we even started partnering together, and I cannot recommend them enough. But a huge thank you to Luigi's for partnering again with Pack-A-Day this upcoming year. They've been awesome enough to support us. Make sure to go out and support them when you can as well by picking up your favorite Luigi's frozen pizza. For me, I go back and forth. The fresh dough, pepperoni pizza, and the ultra thin crust, the cheese, the pepperoni, they're all incredible, which makes it really difficult to choose, but make sure to go check it out because they have the best frozen pizzas that I have had in my entire life. All right, before we get into our main topic, couple quick things. Sterling Sharp, Hall of Famer, so well-deserved. This was a player that when I go back to my youth, and there was that group of NFC wide receivers, it was Jerry Rice, Michael Irvin, Sterling Sharp, Chris Carter, Rob Moore was in that conversation as well. It was just, you saw these players up and coming, and the wide receiver era was exploding, right? Because you had the quarterbacks and the passing attacks that were really coming to life, and you saw some larger than life wide receivers, of course, led by Jerry Rice. But that stretch that Sterling had was right there with Jerry, and they were neck and neck. And the 100, you know, reception season, the first one that he had was just incredible. But this was one of the true first stars of my childhood. And then, of course, Brett comes along. And before Brett, by the way, I mean, it was like Sterling and Leroy Butler, and that was it. Because I was like just 90, 91 is when I started to kind of get into football a little bit more. And it was Sterling, Leroy Butler, Bryce Pop a little bit. Those were kind of the players that we got to cling on to. And then Brett came along, Reggie came along, and the rest was history after that. But Sterling, one of the very true first stars that I got to be so excited about as a Packers fan. And it was a joy to watch him every single Sunday. Such a brutal situation with his neck injury, cutting his career short. But I'm glad that that neck injury did not hinder him from becoming a Hall of Famer, because he was well on his way to having one of the great wide receiver careers in NFL history. Again, unfortunate that it got cut short due to injury, but there's no question that his time frame in the NFL, he was one of the best. And if you're one of the best, I mean, I think number two to Jerry. I'm going to, of course, give it to Jerry, but in that era, number two only to Jerry Rice. And if you're the second best wide receiver over your career, even if that career is cut short, you should absolutely be in the Hall of Fame. More than well deserved. Excited to see him in there. And now it's time to get Mike Holmgren in there as well. Brandon McManus. I mentioned yesterday, everyone on the beat had him 8 for 8. And everyone's out there saying, he missed a kick. It was on family night. He missed a kick. So my investigative journalism that I'm so well known for, I go out there and I rewatch every minute of Packers family night. And I'm watching all the kicks. I'm watching with like hawk eyes, right? I'm like, there's one that's kind of close, but you can easily tell that they're signaling it's good. And I go and I go back and I rewatch it all through again. I'm like, I had to have missed this point because everyone's adamant in the comments that Brandon McManus missed a kick. I go through and I watch it again, and I still see no missed field goal. So my hypothesis yesterday was that this was taking place during warmups, and it was probably they're just individuals, in which case it wasn't counted. And I see in all the comments, nope, it was 11 on 11. It took place during practice. I don't know why everyone's saying he was 8 for 8. He clearly missed a field goal. John Kuhn and company and the, you know, everyone was actually commenting on it, how they jinxed him. And I'm like, I am losing my mind. Here's what happened. Figured it out. Thank you to Basaraski Productions and Alex Becerra for figuring this out. There was a missed kick by Brandon McManus. My hypothesis was mostly right, by the way. The kick had taken place before the start of actual practice. They had players warming up and doing some stuff ahead of time before you actually went through the tunnel, and they introduced the, you know, families and things like that. And then they actually had the start of practice. They had players warming up. They also went through the walkthrough portion of practice ahead of actual practice. And the missed field goal took place during the walkthrough portion. It was at a snail's pace for the, you know, there's no actual rush or anything like that. It took place, again, if you watch the walkthrough on offense and defense, they're just going through and they're literally walking through the plays and things like that. This was the same on special teams. Those are not counted in the official numbers. If you want to give another blemish to Brandon McManus, that is your prerogative. Be my guest. You can count whatever kicks he made and missed in your own, you know, way. That there's no science to this. There's no rules to this. This is the unofficial official count. But the reason why everybody had him for 8 for 8 is because the practice actually started after they came out of that tunnel with the family members and everything like that. There was no more walkthroughs at that point. It was actual practice. And the rest of the field goals, when he actually kicked them, he went 8 for 8, made every one of them. And those were the live field goal periods. So that's where the discrepancy came in. The first one took place during walkthroughs. Yes, it was 11 on 11, but it wasn't actually a full-fledged, you know, practice point. It was not actually going fast pace. Those were walkthroughs. Yes, he missed it. Count that as you may, but that's where the discrepancy came in. So if you're wondering why the beat has him 8 for 8 and why there's still only one missed field goal on his resume for this offseason so far, that is why. You can agree or disagree with it. I don't care. But if, to me, the only thing that matters, and it doesn't matter, by the way, that he made or missed it, whatever, you know, even if it had been, to me, it was just more curious. I'm like, what am I missing? Where is this discrepancy taking place? Which is why it piqued my interest and I wanted to dig into it a little bit more. Last but not least, Corey Ballantyne was released by the Indianapolis Colts. Pose the question out there, wonder if Green Bay is going to be interested. And people were very much, no, we don't want him. He could even make it as a third stringer for the Colts, which I don't have a huge take on the like, hey, bring in Corey Ballantyne and, you know, get him back for sure. But I think you need to recognize the difference between a 53-man roster and a 90-man, or in this case, 91-man roster. This is a 91-man roster season. Corey Ballantyne's out there. He's played good football for Green Bay. More importantly, he's played good special teams for Green Bay. And personally, if my choice is between a Gregory Jr. and a Corey Ballantyne, that decision's pretty easy. Isaiah Dunn could be in that conversation as well, amongst probably others. He's a solid corner. And when he's played in Green Bay, both in Joe Barry's and in Jeff Hafley's defense, he's played well. He can play outside. He can play inside. He can play special teams. This is not somebody that has a high-end upside. This is not somebody that in an ideal world you have out there starting on the field, but he's kind of that ideal number fifth or sixth wide, or sorry, corner that you can play on special teams, outside, inside, has a lot of versatility and is a good player to have active on game days and gives you depth where if you need to put him in, you're not feeling like, oh my goodness, Corey Ballantyne's out there. How are we going to get through this? That big win streak where they beat KC, the Chargers, and Detroit in 3 in a row, he was the starter out there for those games in the secondary. To me, it would be a pretty big no-brainer, assuming that he's fully healthy, to just bring him back. Depth is one of the big question marks at corner right now. I'm not saying he has to make the 53 at all. The more likely scenario is that he probably loses out to the Kamal Haddins and the Kalen Kings of the world, the Micah Robinson, maybe even Bo Melton, and he doesn't ultimately make the 53, but you can have him compete and you can have an option for maybe the practice squad as well. So yeah, I would probably lean towards bringing Corey Ballantyne back, Not saying have him again make the actual 53, but for now, he should easily, to me, have a 91-man roster spot in Green Bay, and I probably would have made that move already. We'll see if Green Bay does. Yeah, that's all I kind of have to say about it. I don't know if they will or not. My guess is probably not, but one to kind of keep an eye on a little bit, and that was, again, my prerogative in bringing it up, because to me, on the 91, at this point in time, he does make a lot of sense. All right, let's get to our main topic for today, the best and worst of Packers training camp so far. Here's my big disclaimer. The truth of the matter is, there are no players to me that have elevated to the level of like, oh my God, can you believe how incredible this player is playing? And there are no players on this team that have downgraded to the level of just what's going on here? Why is this player playing so terribly? We are still pretty early on. The pads just came on, especially in the trenches, offensive linemen, defensive linemen. It's tough to kind of prove your worth so far. There's, again, only been, what, like four padded practices, something like that. So some of these things clearly take time. But with that being said, there are players who have stood out more, and there are other players who have just been extremely quiet through the start of camp, and that I think we're hoping for a little bit more from moving forward. Here's a great example of a player who I think a lot of people are talking about. And this is where I kind of want to rein in expectations a bit. I'm not trying to be a wet blanket on exciting players. And I'm not trying to be like, oh, he's willing to give everyone the benefit of the doubt on some of these players that are struggling. But Matthew Golden's such a great example of this. There is a ton of hype out there for Matthew Golden. I love the talent that I've seen from Matthew Golden so far. It is really impressive. He can go up and get the ball. The routes are getting there. The hands are really impressive that he can pluck it outside of his body. Everything on that scouting report from a positive standpoint, the speed, the hands, all of it are there. It's very clear and obvious to see. But he still has a ways to go as a route runner, and more specifically of just knowing this Matt LaFleur offense and what he's supposed to do inside of it. You know, what route, you know, or like, the motion, the checks, the route depth, those sort of things, those are things that he has to have a much higher attention to detail to. So if I were to say, like, am I closer to saying like he's been one of the better players? I would say yes, but I still think there's a long way to go. Even with Matthew Golden, as excited as I am for him, I want to see him get in more ingrained in that offense over the course of the next few weeks, so that by week one, he's really clicking on, I'm not going to say all cylinders, but he's really ready to go and play a big time role within this offense moving forward. We'll be right back. This episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Preseason football is underway and college football is just starting, but you can already make season-long more or less picks for the 2025 season on Prize Picks. Enter your picks before week one even kicks off. I had an absolute blast winning on Prize Picks last year, and I am gearing up for another epic run in 2025 and already have some key players in mind, including a breakout year from Jordan Love, a sensational second-year performance from both Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr., and an unbelievable rookie debut from Ashton Jeanty. Now, you may be new to Prize Picks, so let's break it down super easy. Prize Picks is incredibly simple to play. You just pick more or less on 2 to 6 player stat projections, and if you get your picks right, you could cash in and win up to 2,000 times your money. That's why Prize Picks already has millions of users, because it's the best place to win cash while watching sports, and there's never been a better time to sign up than today. So download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget to use that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks, run your game. I have one player that I will disagree with everything that I just said, and that is Brandon McManus. Brandon McManus has been phenomenal. He's missed one, maybe two kicks, but just in general, he looks fantastic. He's striking the ball really clean. It's going right down the middle almost every single time. And it's just been a real joy to watch him kick in practice so far and not have to worry about a kicking competition or is this guy going to make kicks when it matters? Just it's not the way that it is for Brandon McManus. They found a really good kicker. He's been phenomenal in camp so far. And he's the one exception to that's one player I'm willing to say has been phenomenal, you know, and is the hype is legit. It's not overblown. It's not hyperbole. He's been fantastic through camp so far. All right, my first negative one after McManus being my positive one is Devontae Wyatt. I've seen one play from Devontae Wyatt in practice so far. I'm sure he's had more than that, to be clear, but I've seen one play, and that was a run stuff at about after like a 1 yard gain. Not even a tackle at the line, not even a tackle for loss. Other disclaimer, 80 plus players out there in any given practice. Plus, we're on the sidelines. He's in the middle of defensive tackle, and it's tough to see in there sometimes. That could clearly be a piece of this. This is a player, first round pick, 25th overall, if I remember correctly. And there's a lot of expectations. He was an older rookie. I think he's going to be 28 this year, if I remember correctly. And they just picked him up, his fifth year option. He's going to get $15 million guaranteed, or right around there, $12 to $15 million guaranteed for 2026. This needs to be a big year for Devontae Wyatt. They are really counting. For all the talk about LVN and LVN needing to take a step, probably the player who owes LVN the most might be Devontae Wyatt. If LVN didn't exist and him not living up to expectations so far, everyone would probably be talking about Devontae Wyatt and him not living up to expectations so far. He barely played this last year, around 20-ish snaps per game when he actually was active for game days. Missed a little bit of time. And you see these flashes from Wyatt that you're just like, man, that dude can move at that size and can hold up at the point of attack from time to time. Like, he has everything that you need to be a dominant defensive tackle and just hasn't been able to put it together. And every single time you're thinking, maybe this is going to be it, and he's going to take that step, it just hasn't happened. Not saying that it can't this year. I'm not saying that once the lights come on, he can't go out and have a phenomenal season. But so far, through the first couple weeks of camp, he has been completely nondescript. He has not made any big plays, at least that I have seen. And it has been one of the quietest camps of anybody that you could possibly imagine. I mean, some of the backup, like James Ester, has made a couple plays that have caught my eye at defensive tackle. Again, difference, he's playing against the threes, I get it, but just about every defensive tackle. Keith Randolph has made a couple plays. Devontae Wyatt, just the one that I've seen stopping a run right near the line of scrimmage, needs to be more impactful from Devontae Wyatt moving forward. All right, on the good side, Zach Tom. Zach Tom just got that huge new contract. And he, first of all, went to OTAs, went to mini camp, started or was ready to start training camp with no new contract in hand. He was rewarded and deservedly so. The contract is clearly amazing. And now he goes out there as this new, much richer human being. And he, what does he do? He just dominates out there at right tackle. I mean, you see him. He gets out there to his spot. The footwork is clean. The hands are clean. He just holds people up at the point of attack. You think you're going to be able to get by him. He's not the biggest guy in the world. He's got good agility, not the fastest, but he doesn't need to be. He's just an unbelievable athlete that cares about his craft, that uses his hands well, that uses his feet even better, and he looks fantastic so far in camp. It is really difficult to beat him, whether you're LVN or Rashawn Gary or Enigbari or Brenton Cox. Good luck, because he just feels like he's in the zone right now, and it's been a very productive start of camp for Zach Tom. Next up on the opposite side is Jaden Reed. Jaden Reed had that two-minute drill early in midweek where he caught, I think he had like five targets and caught four of them, and had a huge play up the seam to help get them, I think, in field goal range on that particular drive. That was awesome. That was the Jaden Reed that we know and love. Getting involved, you know, being able to be a volume receiver when you need him to be, doing the little things, getting up the seam and making plays. But that was it. That was one day. I know he's been a little bit banged up. I know that he hasn't played, you know, as much as some of the other players and team, but you're still expecting him to be a big-time impact player, and it hasn't been that. This is a great example of, I'm not nervous about Jaden Reed. I'm not going into this thinking like, ooh, like this is going to be a rough season for Jaden. Nothing like that. But as far as expectations go, and where you're expecting and wanting him to be in year three and maybe being a bit more active and taking over some of these practices a little bit more, that has not happened. So I would like to see a little bit more from him, and hopefully he can get a little bit healthier, stay out there a little bit more, and start making that impact that we know he can make on this particular offense. Best, the two Georgia defensive tackles. Nazir Stackhouse making real noise as an undrafted free agent, and Warren Brinson's really been coming on as of late as well. They looked the part. They're going to start getting, I think, more time with the twos and maybe even Stackhouse a little bit with the ones for Matt LaFleur. Stackhouse has the run defense, plus he's able to shoot the gaps a little bit, showing off a little bit of pass rush chops. And Warren Brinson, I think the beautiful thing about Brinson is at family night, he got a rep against the ones that he made the most of, got into the backfield and had some pretty immediate penetration. I think going against Aaron Banks, don't quote me on that, on exactly who he was going against, but those two have looked good. And you're coming over from Georgia. I think they got overlooked because of some of the other great players there and because it was such a great defensive tackle class. But Green Bay looks like they may have found two gems in the late rounds with Warren Brinson and then an undrafted free agency with Nazir Stackhouse. On the flip side, we can talk about Carl Brooks the exact same way that we talked about Devontae Wyatt. If we're saying one play for Devontae Wyatt, I've seen goose egg plays from Carl Brooks. Say it one more time. Does not mean that it hasn't happened. Just means I have not seen it. I want to see a little bit more. This is somebody that, as a rookie, was one of my favorite players on the team, was getting pressure inside, was nonstop motor, and really was a fun player for a late round draft pick. I thought he was going to evolve into one of these players that, you know, could really be impactful for Green Bay. Last year felt like a little bit of a step back. You were hoping he was going to regain his form. Right now, I think he's competing legitimately. I see people talk about Colby Wooden all the time and of like, well, Brinson and Stackhouse are ahead of Wooden and so on and so forth. I like Brooks a heck of a lot better than Wooden, if I'm being honest. I think Wooden's outplayed Carl Brooks. I think Carl Brooks makes this team, I don't want to say no matter what, but he's a really great bet to make it. I'm not locking him in. I think he has work to do. Same with Wooden. When you've got these young Georgia defensive tackles that are playing well, kind of upsets the apple cart a little bit and definitely changes the calculus for where they could potentially go in that position. But Carl Brooks, I want to see much more impact out of him. Best is the top three corners. Nate Hobbs said that one poor day in practice, and he's been a little bit injured as of late. I still love what I've seen from him. I get there's been a couple controversial plays and things like that, but his intensity is so dang fun, and I think it's really going to be contagious in that defensive backfield. Carrington Valentine, 4 interceptions so far. He's playing with great confidence, unbelievable instincts. He's jumping routes. He's making plays. And this is the Carrington Valentine I've wanted since his rookie year. You could see the talent almost immediately. You knew he just needed to get the game slowing down and playing with more confidence. We've seen that so far. He's had a phenomenal camp. And then Keyshawn Nixon. Keyshawn Nixon is allowing almost nothing on the outside. And even when he does, even when he allows a completion, just about everything is contested. There's been a couple of plays by Romeo Doubs where Doubs has got the best of Nixon, and Doubs had to work incredibly hard for those completions. Nixon contested it all the way through and made it incredibly difficult on Doubs, and Doubs having to go up and make a really big time effort to come down with that catch. That's the way that Nixon's played. Again, we'll see what happens against the Jeffersons and the Addisons and the Amon-Ra St. Browns and the DJ Moores, etc. But in camp so far, these three corners look legit. They look like they could go out and play a fantastic brand of football at any given moment. And they are giving these wide receivers and the offense in general in Green Bay a ton of fits so far. The flip one, the maybe worst is Malik Willis. And this is more specifically this past week. He had a day in practice where he threw 3 or 4 interceptions, and it was not pretty ones, just trying to force it way too much. You were figuring that's not what we've seen from Malik Willis, probably just a one-off. Then he came back in family night and threw 3 more interceptions, including, you know, one really bad one where Omar Brown had just went into his waiting arms. And another one a little bit later where the interception by Omar Brown, where Omar Brown went up and got it. And then the Kalen King play where he threw late, you know, crossed his body. King read it the entire way and jumped that one as well. Just want to see a little bit better job by Malik taking care of the football. I don't mind in practices that he's trying some things, seeing what he can get away with, learning this Matt LaFleur offense a little bit more rather than LaFleur catering his offense to Willis. So I like all those things. I just want to see him get a little bit more comfortable, confident, making those plays, making those throws without putting it in harm's way. We'll be right back. everyone. I have to tell you about this new game-changing product that I've been using before a big night out called Prealcohol. Now, ZBiotics Prealcohol Prebiotic Drink is the world's first genetically engineered prebiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Prealcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. So just remember to make Prealcohol your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Now listen, I get it. I was a bit on the fence about Prealcohol initially myself, but I've now used it for a bachelor party, the college basketball tournament, and recently for a friend's epic 40th birthday party, and I'm legit telling you, it's the real deal. And guess what? Summer is here, which means more opportunities to celebrate the warm weather. And before that backyard barbecue brew, glass of Pinot watching the sunset at the beach, or a cocktail by the campfire, don't forget your ZBiotics pre-alcohol. Drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great and ready to take on that next day and all that summer has to offer. Go to ZBiotics.com/packaday to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use code packaday at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/packaday and use the code packaday at checkout for 15% off. Make sure to support our sponsors and use that code PACKADAY. Best are the linebackers minus Quay and I guess the new guy as well. And that's nothing against Quay. Quay just hasn't practiced so far. But this group of linebackers has been so fun to watch. From Edgerrin Cooper, who I think is having a really impressive camp. I know it, some people are saying like, well, there's not been the big plays. He is getting into the backfield consistently, making the right plays. It's tough to get interceptions and force fumbles, and you can't really rack up stats because there's no tackles at this point, right? But he's been really, really good. Isaiah Simmons is making a name for himself. Tyron Hopper looks much better than he did a year ago. Jamon Johnson had a phenomenal family night. I think Isaiah McDuffie has done everything that you would have potentially asked him to do with that new contract so far as well. And then Christian Welch showing up as somebody that can still play and maybe make it on a special team side as well. So I really like this linebacker room. I think they've all played well. I think the competition there is fantastic. It's going to be tough to whittle down that linebacker room when you get to cutdowns at the end. On the flip side is Kadeem Telfort. Telfort has had a tough camp. This is the year three with some of these kind of undrafted offensive tackles that they keep around for a few years. Year three, Yash Nyman was ready to step up, be a rotational offensive tackle. He got kept around and he even got some starts, right? Alex Light, they kept for those first 2 years. They needed him by year three to kind of show he was ready. He wasn't. And that was kind of the end of the Alex Light experiment. So now in Kadeem Telford's third year, which way is it going to go? Is it going to go the Yash Nyman route where he sticks around, might even get some starts? Or is it going to go the Alex Light route? So far for Kadeem, looks like it's more trending towards the Alex Light route. He's going to have a great end of camp if he still wants to make this team, and not even on the 53, but potentially on the practice squad moving forward. LVN playing really well so far. I saw somebody post like people like Andy Herman are, just saying that LVN's amazing. I don't know where anyone got that from. I think he's had a solid start to camp. I've liked what I've seen so far. The big thing is he's coming up with plays every single day, but I've been pretty consistent with, I'll believe the LVN breakout when I see it out on the field. Think he's ultra talented. Think that he is a good defensive end no matter what, that he's a value add to your team, not first round worthy. And I don't think he's probably going to live up to those expectations, but I would love to be wrong. I am excited what I've seen in camp so far. It does look like he's taken some sort of step, needs to stay healthy, needs to be impactful. I've seen that from LVN so far. Hopefully he can continue it moving forward. Worst, Trey Hill and Donovan Jennings at center. Trey Hill was so bad at center at snapping that they moved him to guard, moved Donovan Jennings over. Donovan Jennings has been so bad at snapping that he got benched at family night because he had so many struggles snapping the ball. There are balls on the ground, dribbled back to the quarterback, to the side, well over their head. It has been a nightmare for the number three centers led by Trey Hill and Donovan Jennings. That's not to say that maybe they haven't been playing well at guard when they have not had to have that center responsibility of actually snapping the ball. But the center experience for those two has been pretty downright awful. Best, Omar Brown. I don't need to break this one down too much. Leads the team with 5 interceptions, 3 at family night, including 1 very acrobatic pick. I like Omar Brown. You guys know that. I think he's 53-man rosterable. Maybe not for this team, but he should be out there somewhere. And he's going to go out and compete with Zane Anderson and the rest of the defensive backs for his spot on this team over the remainder of training camp and preseason. Worst, Gregory Jr. We don't need to dig into this too much. He's been given some opportunity. I don't think he's made the most of it. I think he needs to play better. And this would be one of those players where they wanted to bring in Corey Ballantyne. I would think Gregory Jr. could be the player that maybe you're doing a like-for-like swap at corner and getting a little bit better player in Ballantyne than what we've seen from Gregory Jr. so far. Best, Xavier McKinney and Josh Jacobs. They just look like absolute studs. McKinney's making plays. He can't throw in his direction. He's picking it off. He looks fantastic. Josh Jacobs, same thing. Just not only on the field, which Jacobs looks great, but off the field, the leadership, the stuff with the Marshawn Lloyd, the stuff with Rashid Walker. He's been there every step of the way. You can tell he loves his team, loves his teammates, wants his team to go out and compete at the highest of levels. And I love seeing Josh Jacobs not only playing this way, but being a leader on the field this way as well. Last but not least, worst, Johnny Lumpkin. Johnny Lumpkin's routes are, let's just say, taking some time to develop. He needs to get a little bit quicker. He's in this double-edged sword because I think he wants to play bigger so he can go out there and hold up at the point of attack because his best trait is as a blocker, but as a route runner, as a receiver, just not dynamic enough. I think they would be probably well off to maybe try maybe something a little bit different than you know, Lumpkin at this point in time, but we'll see if he can make it and maybe try to get his name on that practice squad. But he's going to have to play better if he does want to stay on the team and get that opportunity to stick on the practice squad moving forward. All right, that's going to do it for me today. Our best and worst. Best, Brandon McManus, Zach Tom, the Georgia defensive tackles, the top three corners, the linebackers, minus Quay just because he hasn't played, LVN, Omar Brown, Xavier McKinney, and Josh Jacobs. And the ones that have been struggling a little bit more, Devontae Wyatt, or just at least we haven't seen much from, Devontae Wyatt, Jaden Reed, Carl Brooks, Malik Willis, Kadeem Telford, Trey Hill and Donovan Jennings, Gregory Jr., and Johnny Lumpkin. Shout out to Bo Melton, by the way, who I think is ahead of schedule as a corner. He's been intriguing. He's been a plus player. And I'm excited to see where this goes. I know I won't name names, but there was at least one person on the beat who in the press box said, hey, I think Bo Melton's going to play a significant, at some point this year, will play a key role or a significant role, something like that on the team this year. And also insinuating he'll make the team. We'll see. I'm not quite there with Bo, but he's had a really nice start. And I'm still very excited to see where this can end up with Bo Melton, if he can actually make it as a corner. That again does it for me. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donnelly, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Huang, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Dylan Pat Scott, SoCal Pack, Chris Reger, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkelstinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, Matt Geiger, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, and Griff Henblee. See you guys soon, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.